Miles Turner's injury looking like a sigh of relief for the Indiana Pacers, plus all-star starters announced, and no Tyrese Haliburton in it. We'll talk about that before Ty Windisch joins us to talk Pacers Bucks ahead of their battle tonight and team building as usual. We'll get to it all today on the Locked On Pacers podcast.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and SI, and today we are diving in to the latest news of yesterday, one, regarding Miles Turner's injury. People were very curious about that all day, and two, Tyrese Haliburton's all-star status, because the Eastern Conference starters were announced on Thursday. And then Ty Windisch will join us from the Eurostep to talk Pacers Bucks for the last two segments with Milwaukee in town. And we talk a lot of team building. Bucks did a good job. Of course, they won a title 2 years ago. So lots to get to. We will start with what a lot of people were asking about all day. When will we hear about Miles Turner's injury? Well, the fact that there was no press release required is generally a good sign. An even better sign, the injury report for Pacers Bucks is out. Miles Turner is questionable with a right ankle sprain. That is the injury that he had in the last minute of their game against Orlando on Wednesday. Was limping for a little bit, but stayed in for long enough and got to the bench, took a shoe off. So one, the fact that he's questionable and not out is a good sign for his long-term availability, right? Doesn't seem like something based on that alone. I have not asked him about it or Rick Carlisle. Based on that alone, generally, that distinction is at worst a couple games of absence, right? So given that the Pacers play two games in the next 7 days, right, they don't play again after Sunday till next Thursday. This is a decent time for this to happen if you asked to miss two games and, you know, ample time to recover. But on the bright side, not something long, just an ankle sprain. And look, they'll miss him if he can't play. He's very good. They're 21-20 when he plays, despite their losing record on the season. But all in all, good news, especially the big part of this from a Pacers perspective is, you know, he got hurt last year, and that certainly changed his trade status. Or at least to some extent impacted it this year, with the extension deadline being, you know, 34 now days away, with the trade deadline being 2 weeks away, less than 2 weeks away now that this is out. The fact that he should, based on the early returns, the fact that he could be able to return to the court sooner rather than later is good news for the Pacers. So who knows if he plays against the Bucks, but all in all, good news on the Miles Turner injury front after that scary moment where things looked pretty painful. And the other note I would have on this is not the same ankle that he hurt on opening night when he landed on the foot of someone else during his warmup. He missed the first four games with that injury and then a fifth one on a back-to-back for injury management. This is not the same ankle. That was his left ankle. This time it's his right ankle. So perhaps a lesser sprain. I don't know. Again, I don't know anything, but questionable is a good start. We'll get more details from Rick Carlisle and or Miles Turner on Friday before Pacers Bucks. So we'll see if he's able to go, but that is all in all a good start to that. Number two big news is the NBA announced starters for the All-Star game. And I thought, Tyrese Haliburton had an outside shot. I would not have put it at a high percentage. I would have put it at probably 10 to 15% chance that he would be a guard starter for the Eastern All-Star team. And the reason I gave him in my head that 10% chance is I read a lot of people in media who published their fake ballot or in some cases their real ballot just to see if they had Haliburton on there. And a lot of them did as their East starter choice, right? And so the way this works, if you aren't unfamiliar with the starters only, this is not the reserves process for All-Stars, is there's three criteria that go into it. It's the fan vote, right? Where you rank from first to whatever in fan voting. There's a player vote where you rank in player voting, and then a media vote. And then their weighted tally, 50% goes to the fan vote because it's an exhibition for fans, 25% to media and 25% to players. And then you get a weighted score and the lowest two scores, because it's a rank score, the lowest two scores are your Eastern Conference starters. And so even though Haliburton was eighth in fan vote, and that is pretty good for a guy who's never been an All-Star before in a smaller market to get eighth. I mean, I know people were. It's not a talent ranking. We all know that. That was actually pretty good to finish eighth. I thought he had a shot if media and player went well. Players have gushed about him. Coaches have gushed about him. And of course, the media that, like I said, everybody I was reading, or most of them at least, were saying or writing things like, yeah, I think he's been, you know, the second best guard in the East. Most of them at least finished with a Donovan Mitchell, Tyrese Halliburton pairing as their guards. So I thought there was a chance. The starters were announced for the East. Front court guys were Joel Embiid, not one of them, which was surprising. Giannis, Jason Tatum, and Kevin Durant were the front court. And then when they did the back court, it was Donovan Mitchell, as expected. The other one was Kyrie Irving. And so Tyrese Halliburton is not a starter for the All-Star game. There's no conference teams. There's a draft in the actual game. But he was closer, right? So the league puts out the weighted scores to show you where everybody ranked. So, for example, Giannis was first in fan ranking, first in player ranking, and second in media ranking. That gets you a weighted score of 1.25. That was the best in the East. So for the guard side, the two guys who led the fan vote, Kyrie and Mitchell, were the winners, right? They had such low scores because of that. But they also did very well in the player ranks. Kyrie won the player ranking as well. The media ranking had Mitchell first. And so Kyrie getting that bump from player rank, I mean, look, Tyrese was fifth. Well, I'm bearing the lead here. But that really cemented his spot, even over Jaylen Brown, who finished third. So Tyrese Halliburton, not a starter. He finished fifth amongst Eastern Conference guards, which I think is interesting. I think he's better than the guy immediately in front of him. The list ends up being Kyrie and Mitchell tied, actually, with the lowest score. Jaylen Brown was third. James Harden was fourth. I think Halliburton's definitely had a better season than James Harden. And then Halliburton was fifth. And so the weighting I gave him because of the media rank actually did end up coming to fruition. Tyrese Halliburton ranked third among Eastern Conference guards in the media rank portion. Mitchell, like I said, was first. No brainer. He's been amazing. The 71-point game was unbelievable. But Jaylen Brown actually took second amongst Eastern Conference guards. And then Halliburton was third, Kyrie was fourth, and Harden was fifth. If five guards from the East make it, I would assume it's those five with an outside shot of DeRozan or Trae Young sneaking in there, but Halliburton ahead of those guys. In the player rankings, Halliburton was sixth. It was actually Kyrie first, Mitchell second, Brown third, DeMar DeRozan fourth, Harden fifth, Halliburton sixth, Trae Young 12th in the player ranking. That was very interesting. So he's right in that mix with all those names that I just said in the East. And then the fan rank, like I said, he was eighth in this market. It's hard to get above that unless you're either already really established as a star or having a killer season. All things considered, I think he fared pretty well in this process to finish where he did, but he's not a starter. So what happens next? What is the process next? Well, all the fan voting's done. All the votes are really already tallied, but the starters have been announced. So the NBA coaches determine the reserves, not the coach who's the coach of the team. So the coach of each team is the team with the best record in each conference at the All-Star break. The coaching staff for that team coaches the All-Star game, unless they were the coaching staff last year, then it's the second best team. You get the idea. But the all 30 coaches determine their reserves via a voting process. So that is the next line for Halliburton. And I would say the fact that his media and player ranking are higher than his fan ranking generally bode well for his coaching ranking being somewhere between 3 and 6, like the media and player rank suggests, because some media do talk to, you know, people around the league to help shape their opinion on how to do this. So I think he's got a pretty good shot at being named a reserve, because the reserves are, there's a couple guard spots and there's two wild card spots. You know, if you assume that it's the same order as this, Jaylen Brown and Harden would get the guard spots, and then Halliburton's in the mix for a wild card. But there's a lot of deserving East candidates. It's not like a lock. I think it should be. And if he's able to return sooner, that'd be good. But, you know, like I said earlier this week, you know, the how poorly teams played with he's been out might actually help him a little bit in his case. He, of course, has been amazing. Still to this date, leads the league in assists per game. The only guy averaging a double-double with points and assists. There's guys doing it with rebounds too. So phenomenal player he's been this year. And he's played enough games at 40 to certainly be in the mix. I think it's very possible he'll be one of the reserves. Kendall Brown earlier this week told me, and Scott Agnes, that he thinks he should be a starter. A lot of course, your teammates are going to say that, but you know, he's at that level where that's not a crazy thing to say. So Tyrese Halliburton, not a starter, but definitely could be a reserve. We'll find out on February 2nd if Tyrese Halliburton is or is not going to be an NBA All-Star. So that's the news of the day. But tonight we get Pacers Bucks. I don't think the Pacers have beaten the Bucks with Giannis since like 2018 or 2019 with Thad Young on the team. They won in 2020 in a TJ Warren masterclass, which you'll find out how I know that in the next two segments, because Ty Windisch is going to join us from the Eurostep podcast over in Wisconsin. He actually lives in Oshkosh, where Tyrese Haliburton is from. We talk Pacers, Bucks, all the matchup stuff. Can the Pacers win this game? And at the end, we do what we do when we have guests who cover other teams. We talk team building. What do the Bucks do well to get to where they are? Can the Pacers replicate any of it? And there were some important takeaways from the Bucks beyond just drafting Giannis in the late lottery that I think were really important things the Pacers can take away. Before we dive into Pacers Bucks with Ty, though, let me talk to you guys about LinkedIn Jobs. As a small business owner or hiring manager, you know that success in 2023 all depends on the team members you surround yourself with. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. With LinkedIn Jobs, you can hire qualified candidates more efficiently by matching open roles with people who have the skills, values, and experiences to help you achieve your goals. LinkedIn Jobs helps you quickly attract qualified candidates to your open jobs with targeting tools. They go beyond resume data by using insights from your job post company and their 875 member profiles to put your post in front of the most qualified candidates. Identify the most qualified candidates on LinkedIn Jobs and connect with them fast and for free. LinkedIn Jobs makes it easy to screen and rate applicants based on your job qualifications all in one platform. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering high-quality hires versus leading competitors. Check out LinkedIn Jobs. They'll help you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA. That's LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, check out Locked On Bucks. Kane Pittman and Frank Madden perhaps will break down the Bucks, the latest on them ahead of Pacers Bucks tonight. But we're about to be joined by Ty Windisch to talk Pacers Bucks. Let's do it. Let's talk some Pacers Bucks. Ty Windisch is here from the Eurostep covering the Bucks and has the best podcast name out there. If you haven't put it together, it's not Eurostep. It's Euro like the Greek food. The Greek Freak is on the Bucks. You could figure it out. It's not that complicated. Ty, the Bucks are quietly rounding into a little bit of form after like a shaky December, sort of. What's up with the Bucks? What has caused them to look more like the Bucks again?
Having their players. It turns out it's pretty helpful to do that. And I just think, you know, that's something that I'm sure a lot of teams, I mean, right now the Pacers can certainly relate and see how hard it is to not have, you know, key offensive personnel. And while Giannis missed games too, but it hasn't been Giannis who's always been out. I think you really saw the impact of lead ball handlers in the NBA, which is obvious, but it's something that it can go under the radar. I'll always remember the process Sixers, their worst year, when I thought they might actually go 6-76. I was kind of rooting for it. They added Ish Smith, and it like turned their season around, and they were a competent basketball team because before that, they just didn't have ball handlers. The Bucks weren't down that bad, but they were without Chris Middleton and Joe Ingles for a lot of games. And when healthy, those two are two of the best four ball handlers on the team. So Giannis and Drew were having to do a lot. And then you factor in Drew missed a lot of time earlier in the season. Giannis just missed five games. And the Bucks' offense has really been kind of stitched together. And their defense has been very good with Brooke Lopez. Really like shocking, I think, Bucks fans and watchers and the league when paying attention and how great he's been defensively after the back surgery and coming back and a little rusty last year, all things considered. But Brooke has been tremendous. Other guys have stepped up. But offensively, they've just been like really cobbling together points and really needing to, you know, like getting blood out of a stone, I guess you'd say, the Bucks offense has been. So now that they've got more of these ball handlers healthy, they're actually able to score more efficiently. Giannis isn't having to exert himself as much. And the Bucks look like the Bucks that, you know, we hope to see before the season and really haven't much at all this year.
Yeah, lead ball handling play is like the biggest floor raiser in the league, right? Like I always talked about this with crappy teams becoming even just mediocre, like the Kings going from like ugh to watchable. Oh, look, De'Aaron Fox like can play point guard and not be incapable. Oh, the Suns going from this perennial crap team to the middle step before where they are now. Oh, look, they got Ricky Rubio. And like all of a sudden they have capable point guard play. You could go on and on with a million examples of this, but the Pacers are obviously one right this second. But for the Bucks specifically, it's like you can survive the Drew minutes, but if it's just him healthy, there's only so much you can do. And I don't know everything about the Bucks you do, but the standout thing about them this year has been they were top three, I think top five in offense last year. And they're like close to the bottom five this year, right? So I know injuries are a big part of that, but that's been a huge story of their season.
Yeah, injuries plus really poor shooting earlier this year, and they're rounding into form in January, but the offense still hasn't been all that good, quite honestly. But I think you, five games in there without Giannis or Chris, two of them in Miami, really, I think, dragging those numbers down a lot. You look at, like, even without factoring in Chris, I think when they have Ingles and Giannis on, they have, I think, like a top six-ish offense in those minutes. And, you know, a lot of the other lineups less so. I think even just Drew's on-off splits for a while, and I think still are pretty dramatic. Like, they've been good, very good with him on the floor, and, like, awful when Drew sits because Giannis is having to do so much. And then, you know, Javon Carter, who's had some nice moments this season, also some pretty tough moments, still a little overtaxed as, like, the lead ball handler off the bench. I think his role is more playing off of guys like Drew and then Ingles even with the bench unit and not doing as much creation because he's just not as comfortable doing it, you know, every single possession versus, you know, catching and then attacking a bent defense or just shooting every so often. So I think, you know, it's certainly concerning, and the turnovers have been an issue for the Bucks, and that, I think, even when healthier, has been a problem. It was against the Nuggets on Wednesday night. They just couldn't stop turning the ball over, even with their ball handlers pretty much healthy. So I think that's something they just need to fix as a team. But overall, you know, it's concerning to see offense this bad for that many games, but I think you can see why, and I think they can overcome it. Also, they're really terrible on offense most of the time in the playoffs, so maybe they're just getting in playoff form early.
Shout out to Javon Carter for being as close to Patrick Beverley as you can be without being annoying. That is a hard job to do, but he pulls it off. That dude's a good defender. That all makes sense and is certainly true with the Bucks. And it's impossible to get, like, a rhythm, a system, any identity down without your best guys, as the Pacers have tried, right? Without Tyrese Haliburton, it's been, you know, okay, we'll try to keep this identity. It's like, well, you can try, but you can't. Like, your star is a lot of – your stars, in the Bucks case, plural, are a lot of what you can do and how you do it. It's hard to repeat that with lesser players or new players a lot of the time as well. And yet, here we are, barely a week removed from the zombie Bucks' masterful fourth quarter against this Pacers team to pull off a win against the best shooter in the NBA, TJ McConnell, and the rest of the Pacers that we saw that night. When is the last? This is not a trivia question. I don't know the answer. When's the last time the Pacers beat the Bucks? Like, it's got to be. I know that they won the Thad Young year when Giannis said Thad's one of the best defenders of him in the league in Indy. That was 2018. I don't know if the Pacers have beaten the Bucks.
I'm on the list now.
Since that game. And some of it is the size of Milwaukee, right? That was their thing forever. It's just like long arms everywhere. And some of it is just games like that. The Pacers literally can't beat the Bucks. And I wonder if you have any insight as to why, besides that the Bucks have just been awesome for the last 4 years.
What, you know what's funny, though? I didn't even really realize this. It was February 12th, 2020 was the last time the Pacers beat the Bucks.
I forgot of that game, apparently. Giannis had to not play. Maybe the last time they beat Giannis was...
TJ Warren dropped 35 in that game. Giannis did not play, you're correct.
There we go. There we go.
Yeah. wow, what a game. A lot of turnovers for the Bucks in that game, too, unsurprisingly. But I think it's... The Bucks are just really good at taking care of business against the division. I think now... You know, again, I was going to say before I found the game and got too intrigued by it, like, the Pistons have that rep for just, like, getting, you know, absolutely smoked by the Bucks all the time. But the Pacers are really right there. And I guess it just kind of snuck under the radar, but the Bucks just do that. I mean, the Bulls give them some trouble. The Bulls, for whatever reason this year, can only play good teams well. But, you know, they lose to the Pacers without Haliburton, and then, you know, they go toe-to-toe with the Celtics for 48 minutes. They beat the Bucks, all these other things. Very weird Bulls season. But the Bucks are just like, they I think they really value winning those division games for whatever reason. I mean, maybe just because a lot of years they're easier than a lot of other games because the Pistons and Pacers have been rebuilding. But I think the familiarity just makes them really want to win. And also the common thread is, you know, outside of 2018 Thad Young, those teams typically don't have great Giannis answers, right? Like Detroit, just totally overmatched. I mean, Isaiah Stewart doesn't play. I don't know how much that changes things, quite honestly. But like that first game Chris was back, there was nothing. Giannis had 20 points in the first quarter. Like, they just couldn't guard him. The Pacers, a smaller team, and Miles Turner's a good defensive player, but usually needs like this combo of size, strength, and speed that's pretty hard to find, and just being a good defender, which can be separate from those things. And it's just hard for teams who are, you know, rebuilding or even getting somewhere but still kind of building towards something to have those wing defenders who typically those guys end up on better teams, right? Like that's the skill set that contenders are looking for. If you're rebuilding, though, you're probably not stocking up on the Jay Crowders of the world, right? So I think it's a combo of the Bucks wanting to win those division games and those teams just really not. If you don't have a good Giannis defender, you're kind of just, you know, it's going to take a lot to beat the Bucks if you're any team, much less, you know, the Pistons, the Pacers, whatever.
The list of who the Pacers have tried would be funny to go through, as Giannis. It was a lot of Sabonis because of the size. Yeah. He could at least not be embarrassed, I guess, is the right way to put it. But I think Jakar Sampson got a few games of it.
Yeah. In 2019. Oh, yeah. I love Jakar Sampson, man.
Does he have a Bucks tie?
No, but he's just one of those players. Sometimes I just feel like I see a player like that, and I'm like, would love him to be a Buck. Right now, it's O'Shea Brissett for years. Hey. I've been like, would love to get O'Shea on the Bucks.
Don't check his shooting splits this month if you are an O'Shea Brissett fan. But yes, I am as well a fan of the stylings of O'Shea Brissett. What has worked against the Bucks this year? You talked about the Bulls beating them. I don't care what the Bulls do specifically, but some teams have beaten the Bucks. They're not at the top of the East. What types of players or styles have Milwaukee struggled with? And do the Pacers have anyone like that healthy? I know that Tyrese Haliburton is tough for any team to cover, but he will not be playing. 95% sure he's not playing in this game. I suppose I don't know that. It is after his Thursday reevaluation date.
I would love if he did play, even if it does make life harder on the Bucks. Just because
I should probably just say 100. There's no way. There's just no way.
Okay. Well, thanks for not carrying some false hope with me here. I think first and foremost, like I mentioned, you've got to have something for Giannis. It doesn't have to be one player, but maybe it's like playing more zone or just clogging up the paint, like building that barrier. My co-host Rohan Kadi doesn't like the word wall, so I'm trying not to use it, but building a barrier between Giannis and the rim, it's just a must because, like I said, the math just gets really hard. If Giannis is going to score a really efficient 30, it's just going to be difficult. And guys are going to be getting in foul trouble. Bucks are going to be getting into the line. Like, you just start out at such a disadvantage. So I think defensively, you know, again, like we mentioned, there's no one Pacer where you're like, oh, yeah, we can put that guy on Giannis all night and we're good. So I think it's got to be sending someone and then having help and really just daring the Bucks to shoot. And on the other end, I mean, as TJ McConnell kind of showed, like taking advantage of some space, letting those shots fly when you're open. The Bucks are a lot better at this. They went from near the top to, I think, bottom 10 in allowing opponent three-point shots, which, again, it's all about the math, right? They were giving up too much of those. They were losing their paint advantage. But I think if the Pacers can generate open threes with some of those ball handlers, that's going to be their way to, you know, I guess probably what you'd call an upset here against the Bucks. Pending, I don't know who exactly is going to play. We're recording before the injury report, but I think no reason to expect anyone besides Bobby Portis and, of course, Serge Ibaka to miss this one for Milwaukee. So I think you've just got to kind of win in the margins and try to make life hard for Giannis and hope that it's a bad shooting night for Milwaukee, which there have been plenty of this season.
The Pacers held Giannis to zero last week. And hit 19 threes and still lost. So there's a lot that is required that the currently hobbled Pacers will have to do their best to keep up with. And they did shoot well. They took advantage of the threes. I don't think McConnell's going to hit 4.5 again. But, you know, Buddy Hield's been playing better again. They actually are starting McConnell now with Haliburton now. And I think that's helped their shooting as well. He's their best. To me, he's their best guy at the combo of both getting to the rim and being able to both pass and shoot from in close. Like, they have a lot of guys who can get to the rim, but they're always scoring. You know, your Matherins, for example. They have some guys who can get there and are looking to pass all the time, like Andrew Nembhard, but they don't have a both, except for McConnell, and that's kind of helped their offense. So maybe they can generate some of those threes.
And they got to generate turnovers, too. I mentioned that earlier, but that's been – I'd say that's probably the strongest correlation between the Bucks and losing games, especially ones that they probably shouldn't, has been like, oh, they just keep coughing up the ball and the other team just keeps scoring. Like the Hornets were just hitting everything after the Bucks turned the ball over in that bizarre game where they absolutely trounced Milwaukee. So that's a big one, too.
Yeah, the two things I always like look for in box scores and weird box score games is turnovers and fouls, and the Bucks suck at both of those this year. So they might have had a lot of weird results as a result of that. Look, even if Giannis and Chris don't play, and there's no indication from you and from the brain that they will or won't, but I still would pick the Bucks to win. They'd still have the best player on the floor in Jrue Holiday, and Brooke Lopez has been wonderful this year. So it'll be tough for the Pacers, but they showed that they had a three-quarter blueprint to beating the Bucks. Perhaps if they can shoot that well again, they'll have a chance on Friday. One more break here, guys, so I can talk to you about FanDuel. The NFL playoffs are here, and we're really excited about our new sports betting partner for Locked On because they're the number one sportsbook in America, FanDuel. And if you're new to FanDuel, that's even better. They have so many great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. New customers join today to get started with $150 in free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Just sign up at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. FanDuel has all your favorite bets from the money line to point spreads to player props. Plus, you can even combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same game parlay with the conference championship round coming up in the NFL. Tons of good NBA action every night. There's so much to dive into, all on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. So football fans, don't miss out. Place your first $5 bet to get $150 in free bets, win or lose, at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Make every moment with more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Ty, I told you about this before. I do this with everyone who covers another team. It's time to talk about team building. And the Pacers are finally back to under 500, where these questions aren't as crazy. When they were 23-18, it made less sense for me to be asking people about how their team rebuilt well. But here they are, 24-26 through 50 games. And they're in year one of what Rick Carlisle coined a new era on Media Day. All this stuff about their new direction. And look, when you have the start that they've had, yeah, you change your thinking a little bit. You have to, but I still think they're on a longer-term path, and any acquisitions or moves that they make will be based on that. So in your eyes, is there anything the Bucks did well in their rebuild from, I don't know what to call it, the Andrew Bogut era, whatever you would call that,
yeah,
to now? And is it replicatable by other teams? For example, as you know, not every team can get the best player in the NBA at the end of the lottery, but they did a lot of other very good things along the way. What did the Bucks do well? Can other teams replicate it?
Yeah, I mean, I think you really look at how the Bucks improved, and let's just put aside, like, you know, go get a Giannis and Chris for basically nothing. Like, yeah, you can't dial that up. A lot of teams would be good if you could. But I think you look at after that, and, you know, for all the proponents of, like, you know, tearing it down and just piling up the draft picks or whatever, I think you look at how the Bucks improved, and it was like adding the right veterans to the roster and then making a couple big impact moves. So, you know, of course this season, if the Pacers do end up in the lottery, like, yeah, make your pick, get another young building block. I mean, maybe you get lucky, you get Wembanyama, and then everything's a lot easier, or even Scoot. The fit would be weird with Scoot and Tyrese, but, like, who cares? And also, I think Halliburton's the kind of player who, could he be a two if he had to? Probably. I think that guy can kind of just do whatever he needs to. But I think you look at the Bucks, and it's like their first step forward was the 14-15 year when they had Brandon Knight, and they ended up trading him and got Michael Carter Williams, which I kind of see the process. You don't want to pay him. You get a little younger. Move didn't work out. I mean, Michael Carter Williams wasn't all that good, but you had like Jared Bayless, Jared Dudley, OJ Mayo, some guys on that team who really helped organize the young guys, and I think made them a lot better. And then they took a step back the next year because they lost some of those guys, right? And then I think you look at their next big move was going and getting Eric Bledsoe, who now is probably, you know, looked at as Bucks fans and around the league as like, oh yeah, flawed player. It was a big deal when they got him, and it did make the Bucks
all star level for a couple of years.
Yeah. So I think that is, you know, Giannis is a different beast because he was so good at his age. But I do think, and I see this around the league all the time with these young players, like, I don't think you can, quote unquote, like, arm up too early anymore. Like, I think players, especially like someone like Halliburton, who he's clearly a stud already. I mean, 20-10 assists is ridiculous. Like, I wouldn't be that afraid. I'm not saying push all the chips on the table, but spend a couple picks and go get the equivalent of Bledsoe to, like, make the team good. And not, maybe not this year with the injury and everything, but, you know, use another lottery pick if they end up there, you know, whatever happens in the offseason. But, like, I'm not a proponent of, you know, trade Miles Turner, trade Buddy Hield, trade TJ McConnell, and get a bunch of picks and then use all the picks. Tyrese is good now, and you have some good players. So I'm more on the side of, like, keep building the team, be realistic, but, you know, try to build and then get in position to make the Jrue Holiday move, which I think is obviously that's your final gambit of, like, yeah, we're close. That's when, you know, you win a playoff series or two, right? And it's like, okay, we've got something, but we're not all the way there. But I'm always on the side of, like, go for it. Like, you have good players, you know, I think you get better a little bit faster by winning. It's good for the org, obviously. So I don't know if that's a specific team building thing as much as it is like, you know, erring on the side of aggression when you have a franchise player, which I think the Pacers do. You have to build a little slower and get that infrastructure around him. But I think an offseason with cap space should help a lot with that, of just like, what are the vets that make sense to make this team better and sustainable in the long run? Your Brook Lopez, Pat Connaughton kind of players that just fit and you can slide in and find ways to keep.
Ty, I obviously think Haliburton's great and a franchise-level player, but I think this is the point where I should note to listeners that Ty is from and lives in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
I'm biased. I am biased. He's better than I thought he would be, though. He's better than my Oshkosh bias going into the draft process thought. I was like, yeah, he'd be, I don't even know. Like, I was like, can he be like a super Sean Livingston, like, you know, really like a great, like, third guy? And right now I'm like, man, if they could get someone on his level, this could be a conference finalist next year.
He's
really, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm all in.
He's really good. I mean, even this summer, I was like, I use Mark Price as the comp from the Cavs teams of past. Like, not, I think he could end up much better than Mark Price, but like from first 2 years of like, oh my God, this guy could be really good. Like right now. And he has been. Yeah, I think all of that makes sense about the Bucks, and they, per my recollection, were even a little aggressive, like, before they'd won anything, like the 4 second, what was it? 5 seconds for Mirotić.
Four seconds for Mirotić.
Yeah. Gave up like every second round pick they had to get Nikola Mirotić that 1 year. Like,
yeah.
They were always trying to get the stuff.
Yeah. They were good that season. Like that was the 60 win, their first 60 win year.
That's when
it was
right,
like, oh, okay. But they were like halfway through it and they were like, let's mount up.
First year of Bud or the last year of Kid?
Yeah. First year of Bud. They weren't good until Kid left, which I think is causation, not correlation, whatever. There's a reason. But yeah, that was
well now, to his credit.
Fear. This season is.
They made a conference finals. That's hard.
Yeah, they did. So did the Buck. Oh, actually, that was after. Never mind.
Yeah. No, they didn't.
Yeah, no.
But the Pacers do have stuff to do, that kind of stuff. I always get wary of, I don't know the perfect, there's a lot of decent examples, I guess. Like Atlanta, like, yeah, they made the conference finals, sure, but they went for it too early, right? Like they weren't ready to cash in. And so I think the Bucks did a good job of like the middle ground aggression before they got all the big pieces, right? I think that is a valuable thing to know. Like, what, not only do you get better and like taste the conference finals, the conference semis, whatever, but you also know with like a better team what it needs from its newly acquired pieces. I think that's the timing of aggression. Timing is such a big thing. Like, I do this with every team, and every team has a different sort of answer, or like looks at it a different way. But most people, to some extent, have said like, the timing of moves, and especially the big moves, of course, has been like one of the more valuable things to teams.
Yeah. I mean, I think you look at, I think there's a lot of teams, almost all teams, that they give up the haul the Bucks gave up for Jrue Holiday, and it's a bad move. It doesn't work. And I mean, Jrue is tremendous, and I think he's the kind of player every franchise would want. But you could, if you were the Hawks and you gave up all that stuff for Jrue instead, I mean, right now you're probably still not all that good because there's so much else going on there. But the Bucks get him and then immediately go win a championship that they don't win without him, like, no question. Right. And I think that's the way you put it is smart. Like, you know, the trades that are like one first or like a bunch of seconds is what the Pacers should be looking at in the next like year, 2 years, maybe 3 years. And then can you acquire the right players and retain them, which I think is the other thing about the Bucks is they've been slow to move off guys. I mean, they're additive, but they gave Bledsoe a couple playoff runs before they did it, right? Like, they kept Brook Lopez. They kept Pat Connaughton. Now they're keeping Bobby Portis. Like, you find the right players and you really keep them around, which I think is something that I would guess Indiana would want to do anyway. I mean, neither team is like a free agent, you know, destination outside of Greg Monroe, the legend. But
Malcolm Brogdon, the legend around here.
That's true. It's a good one. But I think that's also crucial, is like building that infrastructure and then keeping it, because cycling guys in and out every year, unless you're a LeBron team, it's probably not going to work all that well.
100%, 100%. And that's what I just said, the Bulls version of this earlier this week, like continuity was a big one there. And like, you look at every champion, I don't know, 10, 15 years, it's very rare that, like, the Heatles even took 2 years. Like, it's very rare that a newly assembled team are just like, boom, they're awesome, let's go. Like, you have to know what you need, build up the pieces. Like, even from a team building perspective, you know all this stuff, but like, it's impossible to just acquire good players and then just sign good players around them. Like, you need time to build up the minimums, the exceptions, the draft capital, et cetera, to like build that team. And the Pacers are on the first floor, so, you know, they'll have a lot of time to figure this out and build up and all that. But, you know, with where they are now, it's a tricky spot when you think about, they thought they'd be rebuilding chain, you know, in year one of a build, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're sixth in the East. You know, you really have to be careful, but still do the right things. And I think what you said, those aggressive feels like the wrong word for what the Pacers should do, but like the minor build to get a little better now makes the most sense.
Yeah, it's like, and I think it's what they're doing already too. You can see of like just acquiring, like, let's see what this guy can do. You know, let's like, oh, we just got did they get Neesmith from the Celtics?
They did.
That, like, just like you get a guy like that, like, let's let him play for half a year. Like, let's see, you know, let's give an extended run. Yeah, and it's like, that's the kind of thing where is he going to be the centerpiece of your title team? No, but could he fill that role of like, you know, oh, we really like this guy. He's a good fit. He plays really well with Halliburton. We're just going to keep keeping him around. Like bringing in guys and just seeing always has value as well. Is Jalen Smith, or what's the Jalen?
You were right, Jalen Smith.
Jalen, yeah. I don't know why I was so second guessing. Like, just taking a, kind of those flyers in the meantime too, of like positions in need and seeing like maybe you stumble on, you know, Chris Middleton is an obvious best case example, but some Pat Connaughton, who wasn't really good his first year in Milwaukee, but figured it out and was a really good culture fit and ended up being a really good core fit. And even like Miles Turner kind of going from, yeah, he's out of here to, oh, it's actually, you know, our best players play really well with him on the court. We could extend him. Maybe we will. Like, maybe we'll do that. It's just using these seasons to get the tape and get the evidence is a big deal too. And I think the Pacers seem to be doing a pretty good job of that versus, like, I don't know, like either just being a total factory of sadness and playing guys who it's like, yeah, they're probably not going to matter, or like hanging on to someone like Gordon Hayward in Charlotte, where it's like, I don't know what they could do anyway, but it's like, he's not going to be around, and you can't, it's a worse situation. Like, I think the Pacers have kind of a nice middle ground where they're getting the tape and they're also not, like, when Halliburton's healthy, you know, totally just like abysmal to watch.
Yeah, they set themselves up well last February. They did an awesome, in retrospect, awesome, an awesome job with the LeVert Sabonis, even Torrey Craig for Jalen Smith moves. Man, Torrey Craig is a Bucks legend, sort of like the from Phoenix to Milwaukee to Indiana to get paid right back to Phoenix triangle that he pulled off is extremely impressive.
It's very weird how that all went down, honestly.
So did he get cut and signed by the Suns, or did he get traded? No,
cash considerations. They were just like, yeah, you don't fit here. Go back there. And there were Bucks fans who were like, oh no, Torrey Craig is going to kill us in the finals. And thankfully, it did not happen.
Did he get a ring?
I don't know.
I wondered how that would work because he played for both teams that year, right?
I would think he did, probably. I don't know, though. This isn't sourced. I'm guessing it wasn't the best fit of personalities, considering they were just like, I mean, he has a skill set the Bucks could theoretically use. And they were just like, yeah, I would rather go get PJ Tucker and we'll just give you a way to do that. So I don't know. Hopefully he did, I guess. I don't really care.
Has that ever happened where someone played for the winning finals team in the same season that they lost the finals prior to that? I'm sure it has. But
I think so.
I want to know what happens with the ring situation. Torrey Craig loses the finals, gets a ring anyway. I can't believe this podcast ended with Torrey Craig discussion. Ty, thank you very much for the time on this lovely Thursday morning. Where can people follow you, your coverage of the Bucks, and all that?
The easiest way, I mean, I'm on Twitter at TIWINDISCH, as you can see on the screen if you're watching this great Locked On Pacers podcast on YouTube. But you can find all my content covering the Bucks and other Wisconsin sports if you're a fan of the Brewers or Packers for some reason at gspn.info. Also, my Twitter's there too. You can find everything there super easily. So please check that out, or not if you really didn't enjoy this, because then you probably don't want to find more. But hopefully you did.
Oh, Wisconsin has so many pro sports. Indiana needs more pro sports. We don't have baseball. You guys have hockey, right? Don't you have hockey?
Only minor. AHL team. Yeah.
We have minor league hockey here as well. Anyway, check out the Eurostep Podcast Network for all of that coverage, including fantastic looks at the Milwaukee Bucks, and who've won 4 out of 5 are in town tomorrow. We'll be back Monday breaking out whatever happens in Pacers Bucks as well as Pacers Grizzlies this weekend, unless we need to do breaking news on Turner stuff, but we'll see where his injury status is at some point. Thank you all a ton for listening. Have a fantastic weekend. We'll see you soon.